there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazquez's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 351, a podcast that puts it all together, that brings together the emotional, the spiritual, the physical, that connects the dots between the ancient and the contemporary, between, well, the Ethernet connection and the Wi-Fi all mixed up together. Yeah, that's what we're about. I know it is wild over here. And if you're ready for a wild ride, if you're ready for a podcast that looks at your life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today, this Armodox walk is the one you should take. So get ready. Let's take the next step. Can you sense some excitement in my voice today? I am so excited. You know, after 7 years that we've been doing this podcast, you know, it's really remarkable the number of people that catch on and are listening. I am so excited and I'm so thankful to all of you, because this morning I just got off the phone from with Washington, D.C., and we got an invitation to go out there to Washington, D.C. for the genocide commemoration and to talk about the stuff that we've been talking about, like beyond the Armenian genocide. Last night I was with a group called High Benefit, a wonderful group of women who are excited about doing something beyond the usual stuff. And you know, I always go back to that Einstein quote, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over, thinking you're going to get different results. You know, it's okay to do things over and over. It's fine, you know, and your expectation is to get the same results. I mean, isn't that what science is all about, right? That's how you test something, okay? So what is the boiling point of water? It's 100 degrees Celsius, right? Okay, so you try it one time because you want to test it. Does it work? Yeah, you try it one time. And you need to do it a few times. And you try it and you try it and try it and you say, hey, water boils at 100 degrees Celsius. And so now you've got a rule, you've got a law, and you've tested it. It's scientifically tested. So there are opportunities to do things and repeat things over and over and over again. And you get the same results. Now, the insanity comes up when you expect different results. So there's a flame on the stove, you put your hand on it, and ooh, it burns. Now, the insanity is to put your hand again on that flame, and you may do it a second time to see, maybe the first time you were wrong, okay? The second time you put it on, and you get the same results, right? You burn yourself. Well, that's how we learn. We learn what is good, and we learn what is bad. Right? So you don't put your hand back up on that flame, because you know that that is bad. Yes, like the Frankenstein monster in Mary Shelley's book. Remember? Goes up to the blind man and he says, good, music, good. And then he takes a smoke out of the cigar. But at first he sees the flame and he knows that it'd burn him. Even Frankenstein, the monster, Monster Frankenstein knew that, you know, fire was bad. Why? Because he had tested it and he had been burnt. So he had an expectation that he would be burnt again, and he didn't want to touch it. So the blind man gives him the cigar, and then he smokes the cigar, and he goes, "Smoke, good, good, it's good, right? Yeah, of course." You know, he's now experimented, and he's realized that fire, and this, excuse me, this is in no way a support or a commercial for tobacco, but you get the idea what I'm leaning, what I'm trying to get across, right? That there is experimentation. It's okay to experiment with different things, and you find out what's good and what's bad. Okay. Now, the insanity is expecting different results. That's insane. So you keep doing the same things, and I'm in particular, I'm talking about definite political trends that go on. You know, people expect different results. Well, you're going to get the same results. You know, you vote for these kind of candidates, you get these kind of votes. That's what it is. That's what life is. You know, you're expecting something different. No. Okay, well, the same thing in commemoration. There is a beautiful picture that I have with a Darfuri refugee, and he's wearing this this T-shirt, and it says, "Instead of mourning a genocide, let's try to prevent one." You know, what a profound statement that is. Yeah. Okay, you're going to mourn one, you're going to talk about what happened in the past. Instead of talking about the past, talk about what you can do to prevent it. And that's not only genocide, anything in your life, right? Anything. You make mistakes, okay? Do you learn by them? You learn by them and you move forward. You can't mourn the past. The past is already gone. You could feel bad, you can feel sorry. You know, but you can't sit there and mourn and get caught up in that. A lot of times we get caught up as people in anything that we do. I'm speaking, of course, as an Armenian man, and I know some of the dynamics within the community. And this week has been really one of those weeks. This call from Washington was really exciting because it came at a time when I was really questioning, what are we doing over here? What's this all about? Last Sunday, I was invited to speak on a panel about Armenian identity. Now, this is a big issue. This is a big issue because, you know, Armenians, like many ethnic groups that come to America, have expectations of a safe life, of a peaceful life, but they bring over a lot of the baggage that they tried to leave over there, but they bring it perhaps subconsciously without thinking about it, and they bring it with them. They bring the systems that they have, and they want to they want to keep their identity, which is legitimate, you know, and that's the beauty of America. It is this giant melting pot. We're all together, and at the same time, there is a lot of diversity, and there is a respect for that diversity. So I think that that's important to remember in this kind of discussion. But at the same time, that word melting pot is very real. It is a melting pot, and certainly generations go by. And the question of identity is not something unique, not only for the ethnic groups, particularly the Armenians, but for everybody. Who are you? What are you doing over here? How do you live your life? Especially in a day and age like today. Let me get back to that day and age today, because I do have another issue that I want to bring up in a few minutes. But getting back to this panel, it was interesting because we were talking about identity issues. What constitutes an Armenian? What constitutes that ethnic makeup? Is it just a question of language? Is it just a question of culture? And there are so many dynamics at play. And we got to realize that we're no longer in this in this small community. It's no longer a homogenous group. When you talk about Armenians, and this again to any group, there's so many varieties. You have ones coming from Iran, which bring a whole different set of standards and understanding. Do you know, for instance, in Tehran, there is a Ararat club, very famous Ararat club, that in this club, only Armenians could go in there. Only Armenians. Now, remember, Armenians are not the people in Iran. They are the Iranians. But an Iranian cannot go into this club. It is just specifically designated for Armenians. And in there, Armenians can practice their culture the way they want to. It's kind of a wild idea that, you know, the host country, people from there cannot go into this club, okay? There are Armenians that come from the Middle East, Beirut. They've seen wars. They've seen infighting. People from Syria, again, the Middle East, and recently, but up until recently, you know, Syria was this haven for the Armenians. Armenians that ended up living in Turkey, especially in Istanbul, you know, a whole set of different dimensions, living with people that at one time had perpetrated a genocide against you, and now you're living with them and trying to come to terms with starting your life. It's a whole set of different circumstances. And then there's the Armenians out there, like us here in America, the out there in Canada, Australia. Let's go to South America. I had a chance to go there a few years ago. The dynamics there are completely different. And I remember talking to one of my relatives out in South America, and I said, why did your dad or your great your grandfather, why did he come here after the genocide? South America, you know, it's the tip, Buenos Aires. It's way out there, far away. And you know what he answered? He said he had asked his grandfather that question. He said that his grandfather looked at the map and said, I want to get as far away from the Turks as possible. And he ended up going to Buenos Aires. And there's a community that keep their traditions in a unique way. And what I'm getting at is when you say Armenian, it's not just one group of people. It's different cultures coming together. And guess what? Every one of them is legitimate. So you start identifying. And so I was at this identity conference. What is this about? And getting back to the what I was talking about, I was just surprised because still there are people who want to do the same things over and over and over again, expecting different results. And I guess, you know, that's probably part of fear. That's where fear comes in, right? If you're scared of the unknown, you don't want to take chances. There's a comfort level in doing the same things over and over again, right? Even though you know that you're going to get messed up, right? It's like the person who gets involved in a relationship that mimics his or her parents' relationship. And you say, well, why did you do that? Well, there's patterns, right? And there's patterns. And certainly there's a lot of psychological reasons that go along with this, but it's a repeat. And there is a comfort level in the familiarity. Okay. So this call this morning from Washington really came at a beautiful time because I was really questioning, do we make changes? Can you make changes in life? And that's a big question I think many people have. What are we living for? Is there a reason? Can you really change it? Obviously, deep down in many, I don't want to say everybody, many people, you come into this world expecting to leave it in a little bit better circumstance than when you came into it, right? Than when you found it. And that's true whether it's life or into a community or anywhere. You expect to leave your contribution to life, even if it's with family. Certainly, that's the big one, right? You come and you contribute to your family. You teach your children. You give your children those values that are important to you. And you look at them and you find the excitement in life. You find the fulfillment in life in watching them produce and come to a place. A couple nights ago, I got a call from one of my young men in San Jose, and he called me up. He says, what are you doing? Bring the family down. I just opened up a restaurant. And here's a young guy that I knew when he was a child, and he's 41 years old now, and he's running a chain of restaurants. I was so proud of him. And you should see, genuinely, as we left that restaurant, I had this genuine excitement in my heart that, you know, look at that. Here's a guy that we remember as a kid. Today, he's so successful with his standards, and he's happy, and he's doing what he wants to do. It's just a beautiful feeling. And whether it's children, whether it's a pet, you know, you leave something with your pet. You know, it's true. And on the bigger scale, if you want to talk about countries, I think this is why politicians get into politics at the beginning of it. And if they're not corrupted, they do okay. And what comes to my mind is Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Remember the excitement, the naivete with which he goes into Washington. And he finds out that the people who are corrupt, the people who are scandalous and doing all kinds of bad things for their own pocket, all came into it with good expectations, with good hopes. So you try to see that goodness in the people. That being said, this week has been an opportunity really to meet with so many different people. And it gave me a chance to really question the work that we're doing in his shoes. In other words, talking about genocides wherever they may be. And last night I was with a group called High Benefit, some 40-plus women that had gathered, and they were talking about how they want to help. And they were so receptive to a new way of discussing old issues. So it gave me hope. You know, in other words, they're not expecting to do the same thing because why? They want different results. You can't do the same thing. You got to change it sometime if you want to have different results. So it was kind of a really nice event. And of course, this morning when I got the call from Washington, they want us to come out there and talk about what we're doing, talk about genocide in this unique approach, in this different approach. And I would really suggest if you haven't watched that video that's called Leveraging Love, do check it out. It's on our website. It's right on the front page because that's what the message is. I know it's a rather long video. It's about an hour long. It's a little lecture that was given at Glendale Community College, but it is on our website. And even if you have seen it, it's a good time to really take a refresher course because that's what the message is. That's what it's all about, leveraging love. So in other words, you have small energy, small amount of work. How about leveraging it so that you can really move those mountains. And I really believe that that's the power that we have with us. So that being said, I want to just share this one last thing. I want to tell you that I'm at that point right now where I'm excited. And I remembered this excitement that I haven't felt this way since I would say, I think it was 2007. We were walking in solidarity with other groups trying to bring attention to the genocide in Darfur. And we were walking across the Golden Gate Bridge. And I'll never forget this beautiful, exciting time. We were walking across the Golden Gate Bridge. It was something maybe about 30, 40 of us. I can't remember how many of us with the In Issues group. We had traveled from Los Angeles. We had rented a bus and we had traveled up there to show our solidarity for people in genocide. And we got up there, met with a few other people up there, and there was maybe a few hundred people on the bridge. And we did our demonstration, and at the end of the demonstration, we were supposed to go down to Golden Gate Park. And I'll never forget the excitement that I had when we turned the corner and we got into Golden Gate Park, and there was a giant sign over there that said Armenian Genocide, the first one, and then it listed off the other genocides, but they had recognized the Armenian Genocide. Well, what's my excitement? I didn't put up that sign. I didn't put up that sign. No Armenian had put up that sign. But others recognizing the Armenian Genocide. You see, that's where we need to be. That the Armenian Genocide, tragically, is not a unique genocide. It's a continuation of the violence, of the hatred, of the evil that's been in this world, and we need to stop it at some point. So Armenians, take your place in that list. In the modern day, yes, it was the first one, but tragically, it's not the last one. So Armenians, you have an obligation to speak to the other ones, not just to mourn your genocide, but to look forward. And that's what our message has been about. So exciting times. I can't wait to tell you, give you some details. It's too early. I literally got off the phone just about an hour ago, and I look forward to sharing with you some details about what's going to be going on, and hopefully we can get a few people to come out there and join us as well. Anyway, with that excitement, how about if we go to an exciting tune for the day, and then I'm going to come back with some more stuff of what's going on and taking the next step.
Thank you.
Sarah Kevorkian, a piece called Ani. Hope you enjoyed it. And I know we got a lot of requests last week when we played Ara Gevorkian's music. Do check out the show notes, you know. We put links on there. People were asking me, like, where is this music from? How do we get it? We put links to every song that we play on our show notes. So do check out the show notes, and there's a link where you can get to know the musician and the music. This particular song called Ani, it is about the city, once referred to as the City of 1,001 Churches. We had an opportunity to go there last summer, and it's now in ruins. And you see the remnants of those churches, 1,001 churches, quite a few churches. Still, the footprints are still there. I mean, they're broken down, but you could see the footprints over there. But 1,001, well, we found out what the 1,001 were. Apparently, the king, I believe it was King Ashot at the time, who had built that city, he wanted the protectors, the soldiers who were guarding the city walls, to each have a small area where they could pray. So each of them were accommodated with a small little church, a small little altar, a small little sanctuary for them to offer their prayer and offer their worship services inside of those little areas. And so each soldier having one, it was dubbed the City of 1,001 Churches. And this song, Ani, off of the album of the same name by Ara Gevorkian, who brings together, you know, the ancient and the classical, not only in the musical arrangements, but by the choice of instruments that he uses. And I hope you heard all those beautiful instruments in there. Anyway, do check out our show notes and you will be directed to not only this song, but all of the great works by Ara Gevorkian.
When you're falling awake and you take...
Okay, how about some Armodoxy talk, okay? You know, we talk about Armodoxy. This is like Armenian Orthodoxy polished up for today. And I want to continue on that theme that we started off with today about trying different things. And you know, there's nothing wrong with trying, but it is scary. It is scary. Because you're outside of your comfort zone. We shared a few ideas about that a few minutes ago. But this particular year, we decided to do a series on the Divine Liturgy. Now, you got to know that within Orthodoxy, within all the mainline traditional churches, Roman Catholic, there are seven sacraments. And the one reoccurring sacrament that takes place every week, at the very least, every week, is the Holy Divine Liturgy, or the Holy Eucharist, the celebration and the offering of thanksgiving. And this Eucharistic service, the Divine Liturgy, is one that within the Armenian Orthodox tradition is so prominent. Everywhere you go, it is the one service that, thanks primarily because of the language, that it hasn't been changed. Everywhere you go, it's the one familiar tune, so to speak, the one familiar area of concentration in your spiritual life. And it's amazing because we have this beautiful treasure called the Divine Liturgy, and so often it gets cluttered up with people trying to understand it by means of reason. And by this I mean, what's very common is because the language is the ancient Armenian language, people come up to it and say, oh, I need one of the pew books. Now, the pew books, if you're familiar with it, not only in the Armenian church, but in all the ethnic Orthodox churches, Russian, Greek, and so on, you find a book in the pew that has a translation. Usually it is written in the classical language and with the letters of that tradition, and there's usually a column that has a transliteration, which is the English letters spelling out those Armenian words, or whatever the tradition may be, Russian words, Greek words, Romanian words. And then there is a column which has the translation. What do they mean? What is the meaning of those words? That's important. Yeah, you want to know what you're doing over there. It's not like you've come to a classical work of art and it's left to just your discretion of what you see in that piece of art. It's not like going to an opera where you listen to it a few times. You like a few of the riffs and a few of the songs, and you say, oh, that was a beautiful opera, and it's worth going to every so often. But the Divine Liturgy has to be a living tradition. In other words, go there and understand in the sense that you are a part of that tradition. And all too often what happens is our understanding is based on those words rather than the entire expression of what it's about. Yesterday I had an interesting conversation with a priest, and we were talking about the ways in which God talks to us. And a lot of times we get this idea that by reading the scriptures, and I know you've all heard this, you know, whenever I'm in need, I'll open up the scriptures and somehow God points me right to the area. And that's certainly legitimate, you know. I mean, you know, I'm not here to tell you that's not where God led you. This past week, I had an offer from someone who approached me and he said, I'd like to debate you. I'd like to debate you about the value of Christianity within the Armenian culture. And, you can debate all you want. I'm not at that point in my life. There was a time when I would debate. I would go out there, and this doesn't mean that I've lost the interest to convert. Obviously, if you find something beautiful, you want to share it with other people. But I also do realize that debate is not the means of changing people's mind. Like, in other words, you have a faith, right? And now let's debate that faith. And because of my debating skills, you're going to change your mind and no longer adhere to that tradition. And it doesn't work that way, does it? One way or another, or, you know, the other way is true, too, you know, that I didn't have faith, but I heard this good debater who expressed the arguments, and now I believe. Well, we don't come to faith like that. And in all honesty, most of church life is because of the convenience, and because convenience in the sense that you're born into that tradition and it's a familiarity. And so you give a nod to Christ and a nod to the church and meanwhile go on with your life. But if that church is going to have meaning and if that faith is going to have meaning, it has to play a significant role in your life as far as your ethics, as far as the way you live your life. And Christianity is a unique religion in that it gives you an opportunity also to make mistakes. And I know there's atonement and there's repentance in many traditions, but in Christianity is so prominent because we see throughout Christian history, everybody makes mistakes. Not just a few people, but everybody makes mistakes. And there's a lot of regret in life. But it doesn't mean that you stop there, but you go forward because you understand that God loves you because you are imperfect. If you're perfect, you just kind of like go into the God ranks, right? And there isn't anybody who walks into the God ranks. We all make our mistakes. And so this Christian faith has a beautiful way of expressing itself through the sacraments to where we understand our mistakes and come to terms with them. And certainly the Divine Liturgy is exactly that. So this individual, he wanted to debate me, and I refused. I'm not at that point where I want to debate somebody because I don't feel that it's through reason that we come to our faith. And certainly there have been so many proponents of religion, people who have actually contemplated the philosophy of religion is all about that. It's like, how do you come to terms with that spiritual side of you? And that being said, this year we decided to look at the Divine Liturgy in a very different fashion. Rather than interpreting the words, and rather than doing a translation and saying, here's a prayer book, how about a series of talks in which you come to terms with how the Divine Liturgy speaks to you and how you function within the Divine Liturgy? And that's what we started to do. We started off a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, doing a series called The Lenten Journey into the Divine Liturgy. And I have to tell you, it is wild. It has been a really wild ride. I mean, I started off during the Lenten season. I like to do something different. I like to push myself. And we said, okay, let's do a series. A few years ago, we did the Lenten journey itself. Last year, we did the Lenten journey, a series of 40 podcasts about healing, the healing process, and bringing a lot of reflections of what I had been through during the last few years. This year, we said, let's go into the Divine Liturgy and approach it in a different way. Rather than have a debate of intellect, a debate of thought, let's have a debate of heart. I don't know if that makes sense, if you can relate to what I'm saying. Perhaps if you listen to a few of them, you might understand where I'm going with this. But it's really not about brain power at this time. And it's really a time of understanding with your heart. And this is what I mean, okay? For instance, the brain power will say, okay, we can look at nature. We can look at systems that are qualified by science. And so we know that a seedling falls into the earth and then it produces a harvest. And we know that flowers are there and the bees come on there and they pollinate. And so there's a regeneration of the species. And so too in human beings, that's all we are. We are brought into this world and we are here to procreate so that survival of the species. Okay, so you procreate and you have your next generation. And basically you exist for the sake of existence. Okay, that's intellectual. Makes sense, right? Yeah. But there's something more, isn't there? There's feeling. There's emotions. There's a reason why when somebody dies, you cry. I can't explain it. It's not just missing. You cry. There's a reason why when you look at a child doing somersaults, you smile. There's a reason why you laugh when they say something cute. There's a reason why you are attracted to somebody. There's a reason why you have a feeling that there's a power besides you that is greater than you. And I know modern science recently has tried to find the nerve centers within the brain that instigate these kind of feelings. Okay, that's fine too. But there is a reality. I'm stuck with all of these emotions and I try to fit in these emotions. Why would we leave the comfort of our home and go out there and help somebody? For altruistic reasons? Yeah, that's good. That's beautiful. But explain to me that altruistic reason. And we understand that the human condition is not just a physical condition. There is an emotional, there is a spirit, there is a soul. And if you've ever come to the near death experiences or been with people at near death, you understand that soul in different terms. You realize that it is not just something that is attached to the body, but it is something that transcends the body and goes beyond the body, so that your existence is not it's not delineated or confined to the body that you have, but there is something that that outlasts, that outlives the body that you have. And we could try to come to terms with that. And there's many traditions, right? Religion has, this is why there's such a wide gamut of religion. People who say that, well, after death, we are reincarnated. We are reincarnated in another person. We are reincarnated in another object, in another life form. There's many, many derivatives of that. There's people who say that after life, and certainly Christianity is one of those traditions, after life, there is a judgment for the life that you've led. And you have to come to terms with that. You have to take some responsibility for that life because you're going to stand in front of a judge who's going to say, okay, what did you do with the life that was given to you? Okay. And there are people who say, that's it. It's over. Do good because it's good to do good. And then at the end of it, you know, you close your eyes and that's it. And certainly that's a legitimate point of view. Okay, they're entitled to their viewpoint. You can't debate somebody about this. But what you can say is that this system is working for me. In my life, I love the Christian experience. Why? Well, because it's about love. Christianity is about love. And that to me is a very pure way of looking at life. Christianity is about light in its essence. Not just the light that lights up your room, not the bulb, not the sun, not the moon, not the stars. But it's about light, about being present. That in itself, Buddhism, there you go. The present, the eternal present. Certainly something that Christianity has and something that the Eastern way of thinking has. The eternal present, what does that mean? And philosophically, we can approach it, we can think about it, but let me guarantee you, you don't make converts through that intellect. You make converts because of the feelings that you have. And those feelings are very important. Now, I know Susie says every so often in one of her blurbs, she says, you don't have to check your brain in at the door. And this statement that she makes, I think she says it in the context of armadoxy. You don't have to check your brain in at the door. I love that statement because, yes, we do want to use our brain. Certainly, this experience that we have in these talks that we do, it's about brain power, right? We are, in a sense, philosophizing. Is that a word? Philosophically approaching the matter of religion and certainly our faith. And, you know, there's some beauty in that too. But what we tried to do with the Divine Liturgy in this small little segment that we're doing, 40 days into the Divine Liturgy, is really look at opportunities for us to grow in faith so that when the priest approaches you, there is a condition in which you can interact. For instance, you go to a Divine Liturgy. Did you know that the coffee hour that follows the Divine Liturgy is just as important as the Divine Liturgy itself? Because there you have an opportunity to engage in conversation and fellowship with one another. Very, very important part of the Christian experience. You can't be a Christian by yourself. You need to engage with people and find out what their pains are. And this is translated into the Armenian expression, tsavadanim, which is a very, if you go to Armenia, you hear it everywhere. Tsavadanim, let me understand your pain. Let me understand what you're going through. Let me feel your pain. Let me take away your pain. And why would you take away your pain? Well, because there's feelings. You feel for that person. You feel a kindred spirit over there. And you want to engage in some kind of interaction, some kind of life with that person. So the 40 days into the Divine Liturgy, this latest podcast series that we're having, has really evolved since the first days that we started. And I invite you to get on board with it. It is a nice way to pass the days of Lent, because this entire Lenten season is about introspection, about looking at the self, of who we are, where we're going, what does our life mean, why are we here, the basic fundamental questions, what is necessary for our life. So during Lent, we tone it down, okay? We say no meat products, no animal products in your diet. Why? It's not just a cholesterol recipe to lower your cholesterol, but it's a way of understanding what is really essential in your lifestyle. And during Lent, we have opportunities with the lessons that come to us. For instance, this Sunday is the Sunday of the prodigal son. This to me is one of my favorite Sundays. It is a lesson I personally believe, if nothing else came to us from the time of Christ except this one parable, it would be enough for us to understand what love is all about, to understand what God is all about. The story of the prodigal son. And what is it? It's a story of two men, two brothers, one who squanders what he has in prodigal living, in wayward living, and the other one who is faithful to what was given to him and really never had even an opportunity to exploit it to the point where he went off the track. And unfortunately, this parable has gotten the name the prodigal son, and I think it's really a disservice to the parable itself, because we look at the prodigal son as, look at this bad guy, because he was prodigal, he was wayward, He went off of the track. That's not what the story's about. What is the sin of the prodigal son? His sin was that what was given to him, he squandered. Ah, I wish it was called the squandering son. The one who squandered what was given to him. Because all of us do this. Prodigal living, wayward living, is not just about going out there and doing things that are quote-unquote bad, but understanding that in our lives we've been given a set of variables that we can alter in different ways. And do you squander them or do you use them wisely? Think about them. What are the things that we waste? How about time? We squander time. How about youth? Yeah, remember? Geez, if I knew what I know right now, I probably wouldn't have slept when I was a kid. What a waste of time. You know what I'm getting at, right? Youth, it's something that as you get older, you appreciate because you realize there was a beauty in that youth that is gone. Time goes by. Other things that we waste. How about our breath? How about this beautiful breath that we have and we go out there and we talk about nonsense? We talk about things that don't matter. This morning on the news, we saw the Kardashians have signed a $100 million contract with the E! Network. And you know what it's all about? Opportunity for us to talk. What are the Kardashians up to? What are they doing? What would Kim do in this situation? Well, we talk. And there's so many opportunities for us to waste our breath. Time, youth, breath. What else do we waste? Well, how about the most obvious? Money. That's what the prodigal son was up to, right? He squandered his money. He had this money. And you know, money is a tool. It's an important tool. And what's interesting in the story is Christ tells us that, you know, when you have it, you got all kinds of friends. When you don't have it, hey, it's pretty much like a hermit's life, isn't it? Where are your friends? Remember in the story, the son had all this money and he had all kinds of friends. When he lost it, you can hear the crickets. Yeah, we squander money. We waste money. It's a tool. It's a tool to do good things. It's a tool to bring pleasure. And sometimes we just squander it. We just waste it away. And probably the biggest thing that I feel personally that we squander, we waste, it's our talents. God gives us a set of talents, a set of means by which we define ourselves of who we are. And we waste our talents. Sure, you know the talent of playing the piano. How many times it brings pleasure, and then we just abandon that. We have a talent to sing, and we keep our mouths shut. We have a talent to draw, and we never pick up the brush. We give it up because we're so consumed with all the other stuff. We squander the talent that has been given to us. Each of us, not only the arts, I'm talking about every unique talent. Motherhood is a talent. Friendship is a talent. Being a friend, going out there and sharing your time. But how often we stay away from really using our talents. And I shared this with you, I believe it was last week in the podcast. We talked a little bit more about it. I think sin gets a bad rap. People think it's the stuff that we shouldn't do. Really, sin is the stuff that we don't do. I always say, don't murder, because if you murder, that's a sin. Obviously, okay, that's a sin. You know, taking away somebody else's life. But how about the other side of it? Do love. And when we don't love, that also is a sin. When we have the talents and we don't use those talents, to me, that's the sin. And certainly, when we talk about the prodigal son story, it's an opportunity for us to look at what was the sin of the son. It wasn't the wayward living. It was He was given a set of variables, and he didn't formulate them in the proper manner to make an equation. He took the order and made chaos out of it, instead of taking the chaos and making order out of it. So the Armenian Church, Armenian Orthodoxy, gives you these stories throughout the Lenten season. And so as we developed this Lenten journey this year, it was keeping in mind the beautiful things that are in front of us and how they are expressed in the Divine Liturgy. And I want to throw this out at you as we're approaching the middle of the Lenten season. Do take advantage of these programs that we have, and I would love to hear from you, see what your reactions are to the Lenten journey and how it's affecting your life. I'd really like to know, because we're having a great time putting them together. I know it takes time, but hey, why squander the time? Why waste the time? Let's do something productive. And at least from our end, personally, I feel like this is something that we're enjoying producing. Anyway, let Susie, our producer, tell you about what's going on over here, and then I'm going to be back with a Clark Kent episode to wind it all up.
Susie here again. Before continuing with this broadcast, I wish to take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners, for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step has given us the opportunity to touch many lives and create lasting friendships. For this, we are immensely grateful. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. We would love to be able to continue this ministry for as long as there is a need. To do so, we must be able to cover our expenses. Things like hosting, server space, software, and equipment are an essential component and ongoing need for getting this message out. So we look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you, Susie, for that reminder, and it's an opportunity for me to thank all of you for your prayers, your support of this ministry, and really all of your feedback is so well received. I thank you very, very much, and for giving me this opportunity to be with you and share these thoughts with you. I hope you find it valuable and interesting, at least. And you know, the bottom line is, how do we make it relevant? And isn't that what we're all about? It's about Armenian Orthodoxy. It's such a beautiful tradition with its rituals, with its services, with its teaching. But it has to touch us today. It has to touch us in 2015. Over this past week, I've had an opportunity to go to many of the schools and share with students the excitement that we feel in Armenian Orthodoxy, or Armadoxy, because in Armadoxy, it's really a pure form of understanding the self, understanding who we are in relation to the rest of the universe. And so, you know, we have opportunities to engage in dialogue with young people, and they're just so bright and questioning. And it's not about saying, okay, this is the tradition, believe it, but how does that tradition function in my life? I mean, think about how many changes people have gone through. The changes that would take a lifetime in the old times are happening daily. And so there's a lot of confusion. In fact, recently I was listening to one of the educators talking about the necessity to regulate some of the information that's coming out. And I want to do a podcast just about that next week. And this is where I get into the Clark Kent story that I told you. Hopefully I could put this podcast together for next week, because it is exciting to me, a revelation. But think about this, about the function of Clark Kent as opposed to Superman. One was his alter ego. Superman could do everything. He wasn't God, because at some point he did have his weakness, right? Kryptonite. But he could do everything. Just about. Clark Kent could do everything too. He was powered with a typewriter. He had fast fingers, right? He could type pretty fast. But I'm going to leave you with that, okay? Just kind of think about that. It's a teaser, yes, it's a teaser. In the old days, they'd tease us. What will happen next week? Well, what will happen next week? We're going to talk about Superman and Clark Kent. I'm just going to leave you with that because I came to a beautiful revelation the other day, and I want to share that with you in a podcast. Anyway, for right now, I want to ask you to get involved with all of the great stuff that's happening here at Epostle, as well as In His Shoes. We have a big project coming up called the 100-Year Journey. If you are planning to be in the Los Angeles area anytime soon, do plan to be there April 15th through the 24th, because we're going to have an installation that's called the 100-Year Journey. I'm working with Gregory Baylarian, the artist extraordinaire, putting together this project, and I look forward to having so many people walk through it. Right now, we've got commitments from students who are going to be coming. Last night, we signed up a bunch of docents who will be journeying through that installation, but you could find out all of that information at our website, inhisshoes.org. Do check out inhisshoes.org. It was revamped earlier this year, and it's got just all kinds of stuff on there available for you, free of charge. It's there for the download. It's there for the viewing. It's there for the listening, and it's made possible because of this ministry. And I want to thank all of you for your prayers and support once again. Hey, listen, we are at the end of today's show. Do get involved with us also on Facebook. It's a fun way of just sharing the information. Biggest thing that you could do for us, share it. Get out there and share the links that we put up on the internet. For right now, I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it. For our producer, Susie, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your podcast out.